Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Nayland, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That? You can check out more at whyarepeopleintothat.com.
You're listening to episode 18 of Why Are People Into That? I'm your host, Tina Horn. Recently, a friend told me that his favorite Why Are People Into That episodes are the ones on subjects he didn't necessarily think that he, himself, was into. We agreed one of the sexiest things that you can hear is people talking about what they're into. If you're curious about past episodes you may or may not be into yourself, check out whyarepeopleintothat.com for a complete episode guide and information about all of my terrific guests. It's no secret that I appreciate a good spanking. And I'm not alone. Today's guest, journalist Gillian Keenan, loves spanking so much that she has written several of the most intelligent articles on the subject I've read in a long time. You know, a lot of my guests are old friends and colleagues, but this episode is an example of me inviting somebody that I really admire over to my place, drinking coffee for a few minutes, and then just pressing record. So, grab your nearest wooden hairbrush, and don't forget your arnica as we explore why are people into spanking.
Hi, Gillian. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tina?
I'm really great. I'm so happy to have you on the show. So Gillian Keenan is a writer and journalist. She's been published in the New York Times and the New Yorker and the Washington Post and a lot of really, really, really great stuff about sexuality, especially on Slate.com. Just a really long, impressive list is on your website, which it's Gillian NYC, right?
Yep, that's
yeah,
it.
Cool. So I definitely urge people to check out her writing. I first became familiar with your writing when you wrote a piece called Is Kink a Sexual Orientation on Slate? And then HuffPost Live did a segment about it, and they asked me to come on and be a correspondent, and I said yes, and then I was like, okay, now I'm also going to read the piece. You know, I was going to do it anyway, but then that piece was really thought-provoking and really well-written, and, you know, there's a lot of malarkey about sex, particularly kink, out there, and I just thought that piece was, like, something new under the sun. It was so good,
Thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and then I started reading your other stuff, and I saw your Modern Love piece was about, and the New York Times from a while back was about spanking, and then you'd written other stuff about spanking on Slate, and I was like, well, we gotta get her over here to talk about spanking. But before we do, something that I noticed when I was looking at your website is that you're obsessed with Shakespeare. And I, too, actually am totally obsessed with Shakespeare. I would love for you to start just talking about that because you're writing a book about Shakespeare and sex, right? And global sexuality, is that what you said? And,
Even better than that, it's a book about Shakespeare and spanking.
Yes!
Meet people in certain more conservative environments, I say that it's a book about Shakespeare and global sexuality.
Nice, nice. But okay, so that's the website spin.
Yeah, that's the website spin. That's the official spin. If I meet people at in a professional capacity, it's about Shakespeare and global sexuality. But between you and me, and everyone listening to your show, it's about my two obsessions, which are Shakespeare and spanking.
Oh my god, we're gonna get along great. That's funny to think of global sexuality as a code for spanking, because maybe I should start saying that to people when I'm, you know, what are you into? What's, like, your favorite king? Oh, you know, it's global sexuality.
I mean, to be honest, it is, it's not totally inaccurate to say that it's a little bit about global sexuality.
Yeah.
For a while, years ago, I used to live in the Sultanate of Oman.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is a very conservative Islamic country.
I mean, it's cool that's so fascinating that you lived there.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience. I love Oman. But while I was there, I ended up doing a project, which is going to be a pretty significant part of my book, where I used Shakespeare as a vehicle to chat with Omani women about their romantic and sexual lives.
Wow.
Because Oman is so conservative,
yeah,
and so religious that talking about sexuality is very, very taboo. So, for example, arranged marriage is very common in Oman. Most young women have arranged marriages, often with a cousin. And if I just went up to a woman and said, hey, how do you feel about arranged marriage? Or, hey, how do you feel about marrying your cousin? They would, without exception, say, oh, I don't have an opinion about that. I don't really think about that.
Yeah.
Just because those conversations are so taboo.
Right.
But what I found throughout the course of this work was if I came up to a woman and said, so, hey, this girl, Juliet, she has to choose between Romeo, who she loves, and Paris, who her parents chose for her. What do you think? Did she make the right decision? Then they would really open up, because
yeah,
it's safe to talk about Shakespeare. I wasn't really asking them about arranged marriage. I was asking about Romeo and Juliet. And because they felt so safe, they would open up and say, oh gosh, Juliet's an idiot. Everything ends so badly because she should have listened to her parents and married Paris. It's like my cousin. And then they would tell me personal stories because they felt comforted by the fact that we were just talking about something as safe as Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big portion of my book too.
It's like, are you on Team Leo or Team Paul Rudd?
Exactly.
I love that. That's beautiful to think about the way that stories can be a universal language, especially stories that are so fundamental or elemental as Shakespeare stories.
He's been translated into more languages than any other book except the Bible. So I really think that Shakespeare has become a language, like you said.
Another book of stories open to interpretation.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's your favorite play?
Gosh, it kind of ebbs and flows with the seasons. I could tell you current favorite today, and I might have a different favorite next week.
Yeah.
But I'll say that pretty consistently, Othello is a tragedy that I love, and As You Like It is consistently one of my favorite comedies.
Yeah.
But they all have special places in my heart for different reasons.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite, Tina?
You know, I it's true. You kind of have to pick a favorite comedy and a favorite tragedy. You know, I really love Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah,
I was in it in high school. So I think that that's part of it. I love Beatrice and Benedict. They're such great, that's such a great love story. And tragedies, you know, the first one that comes into my mind is Titus Andronicus, but I think that that's just, it may be because of the Julie Taymor movie, and also recently there was a production at the Globe in London where people were, like, puking and fainting.
Yeah.
There's something about that that I love I love that people think about Shakespeare as this, something you can talk about in polite company, something that pretty much everybody needs to acknowledge is really great, you know, some of the greatest literature ever made, et cetera, et cetera. It's, you know, or it's sort of high-minded and difficult to understand, and, you know, but then you've got this gruesome, macabre story of...
And it's super dirty, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when I tell people I'm writing a book about Shakespeare and spanking, or Shakespeare and global sexuality, depending on the company, I get kind of funny reactions, and people say, how does that fit together? And I want to say, what are you talking about? The man buried cunt jokes in his plays. Literally, he hid the word cunt inside them. And I think one academic counted the number of different words that Shakespeare uses throughout the canon for vagina.
Mm.
And it's a shockingly high number. I forget what it was, but it was something like 78. Like, the man found 78 different words for vagina.
Well, I mean, it really is filled with puns and double entendres, and sometimes, because they're not in the context of the common colloquial way that we speak now, sometimes it's harder to tell, but the second that you really start reading it or studying it, or that you're in a play and you realize in the, sometimes the meaning of the double entendre is in the context as well, and all of a sudden you're like, this is very bawdy.
Yeah, a lot of the dirty sexuality of Shakespeare gets lost today, but certainly in his own life, his audience would have picked up on it.
Yeah.
So I like to think of Shakespeare as a kind of really good, really dirty soap opera that is fun and juicy and, as you said, gruesome sometimes.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Is that, can you give me an example of a play that has spanking explicitly in the text?
None of the plays have spanking explicitly in the text, or at least in a sexual context.
Right.
A few that have allusions to physical violence against children or wives.
Sure.
But not in an erotic
context. I'm thinking of Taming of the Shrew, but maybe that's just because of Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah, in Kiss Me, Kate, which is based on Taming of the Shrew, there is a spanking.
Right.
But I think it's really important to note that in Taming of the Shrew, there is emphatically no physical violence.
Interesting.
A lot of people talk about Taming of the Shrew as an example of an abusive relationship. They think that Petruchio abuses Kate, or that the play is somehow an assault on women.
Yeah.
I see it totally differently. I have a whole chapter about Taming of the Shrew. Each of the chapters in my book will be a different play.
Oh, cool.
But I think it's really important to emphasize that there is no physical violence between them in Taming of the Shrew. But I do think that there is a kinky character in the canon, not in Taming of the Shrew, in another play. But I guess people will have to read my book to find out which one.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to read it. That's... God, I'm thinking of so many.
You're
different
thinking through the characters and wondering who it might be.
I mean, I have some theories, but I also don't wanna blow it, because I think that that's brilliant. I think that people should just go get your book. And it's HarperCollins is putting it out.
Yeah, it'll be released in 2016. And
oh, it's so long.
I know. I have to write it first. I've only written about a third so far, but it's essentially going to be a bibliomemoir.
Cool.
Where I look at how my sexual identity influenced my understanding of Shakespeare, and how my very long, very intense background with Shakespeare influenced my understanding of my sexuality.
Wow, that is very crush-worthy,
hopefully,
I have to say.
Hopefully it'll turn out well.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. So that brings us to the reason that I brought you here today, which is, you know, I was on a podcast called The Massacast recently, and it's great. You should totally listen to it.
I should.
Or perhaps be a guest on it. The host was asking me, somehow the subject of, you know, my personal favorite fetishes came up, because, you know, I try to talk about things in general terms. I'll give an example, but I can be protective of my privacy and also not wanting to make it be so much about my desires. But the one thing that I can never resist talking about is spanking. And he said, oh, well, who are you going to have on the show to do Why Are People Into Spanking? And I was like, you know, I don't know yet. I'm going to have to find somebody whose writing or education or speaking on the subject just really says something new that I haven't heard before. And then I started reading your pieces and I was like, she's the one!
I think it's a little unfortunate, the extent to which spanking fetishists are afraid to talk openly about this kink.
Mm.
There are a lot of people who share this obsession of mine, or this sexual identity, orientation, whatever you want to call it. But I think in some ways, having a kink as specified as spanking is in some ways even more stigmatized than having a general interest in BDSM. I know that for a long time before I started writing and speaking publicly about having a spanking fetish, it was a lot more comfortable for me to just tell people I was kind of into BDSM. It's how I first broached the subject with my now husband way back 8 years ago when we first met. I told his roommate, we were in college at the time, so I went to a party and kind of pretended to be tipsy and mentioned to his roommate that I was, quote, kind of into BDSM, with the assumption that it would get back to David.
Right.
And it did, but that's not really the whole truth, because I'm not really into BDSM generally. I'm into spanking very specifically and very intensely. And in some ways that was even harder to admit.
Yeah. It can feel more comfortable to make that general statement than to make yourself vulnerable and say, no, this is who I truly am.
Yeah. No, I am. And there's, I guess, some pop cultural images of BDSM that make it a little more comfortable. We see pictures in magazines and in TV shows of these beautiful leather-wearing goddesses.
Right.
Or gods. And that makes the whole thing seem a little more familiar or comfortable than...
Or fashionable.
Or fashionable, yeah. Trendy, maybe. Than saying, I'm a spanking fetishist.
Yeah.
Which immediately... raises a lot of disturbing implications and questions and associations. And I think for a lot of people, it's easier to just avoid that. So I'm not surprised that it took you a while to find a spanking fetishist who's willing to talk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. In a way, there's sort of this paradox with spanking. On one hand, I think in a lot of kink communities, it's seen as a little bit of a gateway drug, or a very, in some of the spanking classes that I teach, I will even talk about how it can be, if you're new to BDSM, or you want to explore kink, you want to explore power dynamics with your partner, you want to explore sadomasochism and erotic pain play, that spanking is a great way to start because it's simple, it doesn't require fancy expensive equipment, it's versatile and malleable, almost everyone has an ass, almost everyone you know has
a hand
or some way to wield something that can produce impact, and that can be a great way to explore so many different dimensions of BDSM, and that it can be very romantic and sensual or sexual. It can be foreplay for sex, but then it can also be some of the most severe and intense domination, submission, and sadomasochism that you can experience. So in a way, it's sort of this... versatile, almost like intro thing. And then on the other hand, as you were saying, there are a lot of very loaded associations with spanking. Can you speak a little bit more to what you were referring to when you're saying that you think that some people are disturbed by it in some ways?
Well, I think it automatically raises sort of inevitable questions and associations with spousal abuse or domestic violence.
Correct.
Certainly it raises questions and associations about child abuse or childhood violence.
Mm. Like we were just talking about trauma and...
Yeah, exactly. So I think I absolutely agree with you. In a lot of ways, spanking is kind of a gateway drug that can lead into the wide, wonderful world.
Down the rabbit hole,
Yeah, down the rabbit hole into the world of general sadomasochism. But at the same time, being so specific about something is a little alarming and confusing, even for me. Who the heck thinks about spanking every day? Who the heck wants to read stories about spanking every day? Well, I do.
Yeah, but me too, honey.
Why the hell am I into that?
Yeah, why the hell are you into that?
It's a good question.
Yeah. Do you want to speak to that a little bit about some of the thoughts that you have had since that time about...
Why the hell am I into this?
Exactly.
I think... Ask me again in a week, and I may have a different opinion.
Yeah.
But right now, after thinking about this for years and years and speaking about it since I've started writing openly about my spanking fetish, this is what I believe right now.
Yeah.
I believe I was born kinky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some people are. As I've said, I think that kink is, in my case, a kind of orientation that I was born with. And I think that people around the world then specify those orientations with cultural cues.
Mm.
In the United States, children are exposed either in person or just through cultural dialogue to the idea of spanking. And if you're born with an inclination towards domination and submission or a BDSM-like dynamic, I think it makes sense that a lot of Americans from an early age pick up on spanking as a way to express their innate orientation that draws them towards BDSM type dynamics.
Like, not to interrupt you, but you're starting to fantasize maybe about something that, put in more abstract terms, would be about power exchange or punishment and discipline and the associations or the concrete manifestations of those things that you start to reach for are, you know, like school teachers at, you know, more powerful position of a school teacher or a parent or a governess or a babysitter or somebody, domestically.
Exactly.
You know, doing something punitive to someone who they have power over, usually someone younger than them.
Exactly. So I don't think I was born with a spanking fetish. That would be way too specific,
That's interesting.
To be an orientation I was born with. But I think I was born with a submissive orientation, let's say. And then from a very early age, spanking was something that was presented to me by our culture as a way to express my submissive orientation, which I think explains why there are so many spanking fetishists in the United States. And in the United States, that's often specified with paddling.
Yeah.
Whereas in England and the UK, there's a lot of caning.
Caning.
It's all about caning.
Oh, man.
And in other parts of the world, I think I see people specifying their innate dominant or submissive orientations by what their culture presents them with. So I know for certain that I was kinky by the time I was 5 years old. I certainly wasn't aware of any erotic element to this.
Yeah.
I knew that I did things throughout my childhood of which I was deeply, deeply ashamed. As I wrote in the New York Times piece, I used to look up the word spanking in the dictionary, and I get hundreds of emails from people who say that they did the same thing. I loved reading books like Tom Sawyer, and Roald Dahl's Boy, and other books that include spanking scenes.
Yeah.
A lot of people have written to me about looking through comics, strips, for sort of surprise spankings. I think we call them startles, moments when you're startled by a spanking reference in pop culture.
Yeah.
I did all of that. Even, I've never written about this before, except in my book, but when I was as young as 5 years old, and this is, like, a super weird and embarrassing even thing to admit.
Yes, lay it on me.
And I think this, again, explains why it's so uncomfortable for so many people to talk about having this kink or this fetish.
Mm-hmm.
Because even for me, who is so open about it and writes so publicly about it, I get a little uncomfortable and weirded out by my own life and my own experience as I think about these stories and share these stories. But when I was 5 years old, my friends and I used to play house.
Mm-hmm.
What little kid
like you do
doesn't. And I remember there was a boy in my neighborhood. We'll call him Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we played house, Tommy insisted on being the mom. And he wanted to put on lipstick and, slip his tiny feet into high heels that were way too big for him. And I can't make assumptions about Tommy.
Sure.
But I, we've long since lost touch. But, I do wonder if he was starting to become aware of a transgender identity that he expressed through playing house.
Or really any kind of queer identity where you're curious about the gender lines being blurred and somebody saying, oh, well, because you're a boy, you're not allowed to express yourself in this fabulous way, so...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, by being the mom, Tommy got to pretend to be married to the guy who was the dad when we played House.
Right.
So it's interesting to think back at how early kids begin to sort of grapple with their gender identities or sexual identities. But it was no different for me playing House. I remember there was another girl in the neighborhood. We'll call her Cassie. And once we were playing House, and Cassie grabbed a belt and told us that she was playing the mom that day. It was not Tommy's turn. It was Cassie's turn to be the mom.
Interesting. And it's Cassie, a very high demand role.
I know. I never wanted to be the mom. I wanted Cassie to be the mom because one day Cassie grabbed a belt and told us that we were behaving very badly and she was going to punish us.
Mm.
And it was truly one of the most memorable and exciting experiences of my early childhood. And from that point on, every time we played House, I made sure to, when we were collecting, you know, pots and pans and plastic plants to set up our playhouse, I always grabbed a belt. And well, I always...
No house is complete without one.
No, I mean, you know, you gotta have it.
And you were like, excuse me, just so you know, I've been very bad today.
Yeah. I always tried to push the dynamic of House in that direction. And it happened a few times that we played this way. And again, I've lost touch with all of these people. I don't know if Cassie was grappling with a dominant identity.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, and this harkens back to the... frightening and disturbing implications that I mentioned before. I don't know if Cassie was maybe grappling with some trauma that she experienced at home.
Right.
I can say that I was absolutely never spanked with a belt as a child.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a real life association for me.
Yeah.
But it may have been for her, which if so is, you know, a tragedy.
And also sometimes little boys want to be the moms, and sometimes little girls want to pick up daddy's belt, and then they grow up and they are not gay or trans or kinky or anything. They're just mimicking something that they've seen in the world around them or on TV, or they're like, oh, I want to be this, I want this dynamic. My imagination is a open, fertile place, and I'm just gonna make this. I have no cultural framework for understanding any of these things, so I'm just gonna do it, and then it doesn't actually end up really being that significant at all.
Absolutely. Maybe Cassie, before that one day, watched an episode of Little House on the Prairie where someone gets spanked with a belt.
Did they do that on Little House on the Prairie?
Oh, girl.
You're like, let me tell you, in episode 73, there's a particularly good one.
I'm like a human encyclopedia for these references. But yeah, maybe Cassie just saw an episode of Little House on the Prairie, and then when we played House, she was like, I'm going
to enact
what I saw on the show.
Yeah.
And it was certainly not an indicator of childhood trauma or of her sexuality at all.
Yeah.
But at the time, I felt super ashamed to be playing House this way. I knew that there was something weird about it. I knew that there was something weird, and it felt very wrong every time I looked up the word spanking in the dictionary. I hid all this very fiercely and certainly had no idea that it was erotic in any way.
What does it say in the dictionary when you look up spanking?
It's just the definition. It's like to repeatedly slap the buttocks with open hand or paddle or something.
But does
like
it
that.
does it specify its punitive quality? Like, does it say?
I think so. I think. I mean, it's been a while since I've looked up spanking in the dictionary because now I've moved my sexuality into even better places.
Yeah, you're like, I know what the definition of that is.
But it's only in hindsight that I can look back and say, "Yep, I was kinky when I was five." Because
yeah,
at the time, I had no frickin' clue.
Yeah, of course. Naturally. Yeah. So what, now that you are no longer five and you're no longer playing House, and you have been able to find partners to experiment with, and you know, you write about it openly, can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you love about spanking?
It's a good question.
Or we could even frame it as, what is there to love about spanking? Like, let's say you're talking to a friend and they say, oh, I know that you're kinky, I've read your articles, and I really want to explore BDSM, and I'm not really sure where to start, but I was sort of thinking about spanking, so can you tell me, like, why I should do that, or why I should even go there, like, on it with a date or with a partner, or...
Definitely. That's an easier question to answer than why do I personally love it. I think that I personally love it just because I'm satisfying some kind of orientation. But what is there to love about spanking? There's a lot.
Yeah.
I think a really fundamental one for me and for a lot of people is trust.
Mm.
I think for dominants or tops, there's something really powerful about having someone trust you enough to submit to you that way.
Oh my god, absolutely.
And from my side of the coin, the submissive side, there's something really powerful about trusting someone that much.
Yeah.
And loving someone so much that he or she, and from now on I'll use the pronoun he because I'm married to a man.
Sure.
There's something really powerful about trusting and loving someone so much to let him hurt me. And trust that he, won't take it too far.
Yeah.
So trust is a big part of it. As I wrote in, the piece you talked about on HuffPo Live, or no, different piece, I'm getting my stories mixed. as I wrote in another piece, there are, physiological, effects to spanking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I loved your description of that. Can you talk about that a little bit? It is super interesting.
And, something that, you know, when I do have, vanilla friends or non-kinky friends who have asked me about spanking, this is something that can apply to everyone. You don't have to have an innate kink or any kind of, psychological fog to work through to enjoy spanking, because right. There are physiological reactions to spanking that are consistent with every person.
Right.
I learned this. My husband's a doctor.
Convenient.
And yeah. Yeah. So one day I was thinking about spanking, as I tend to do, and I looked through one of his anatomy textbooks and asked him about this and learned that there's a blood vessel in the pelvic region called the common iliac artery. It's when blood rushes to someone's butt, it rushes down the common iliac artery. That's why butts turned red. Mm-hmm. That's why butts turn red when they're being spanked. It's because blood is rushing to that region. But the artery splits. Half of it directs to the butt, and the other half directs to the genitals.
Interesting.
Yeah. So when someone is getting a spanking, blood isn't only rushing to their butt, it's rushing to their genitals, which is the same thing that happens during arousal. It's genital blood engorgement. And I can feel that process happening when I'm being spanked. Also, spankings often provoke a release of oxytocin mm-hmm. in people, which is a sexual arousal hormone. Also, if you look at diagrams of nerve tracts in the spinal level, you'll see that in the S2 and S3 spinal levels are the nerves that stimulate both the butt and the genitals.
Mm-hmm.
And some scientists have speculated that those nerves can crosstalk and stimulate one when the other is provoked. I'll say that I've got...
I've been speculating about that, too. I'm no doctor, but I don't mean to be glib. This is such interesting information.
It is, and I think this explains why I have a few dominant friends who are married to vanilla partners.
Mm.
And that can be a tricky situation.
Of
because
course.
If you have a desire to spank your partner, but your partner doesn't share that kink,
right.
They have to tread carefully to make sure that the non-kinky partner can tolerate whatever amount of pain.
Or find a way to enjoy it.
Yeah, find a way to balance it out.
Yeah.
But I've got a few dominant kinky friends who have, let's say, vanilla partners, who have come to love being spanked,
right.
even though they're not kinky, just
right.
because they experience these physical arousals. I got an email the other day from a man who said that his wife has come to love being spanked because she feels blood rushing to her clitoris in a way that it otherwise doesn't. And I can say that, without getting too crass,
Please be as crass as you want. Yeah, definitely.
Not often, but a few times, I have been able to reach sexual climax only from being spanked, which says to me pretty conclusively that there is something physiological happening.
And this is a phenomenon I've heard of before as well.
I used to think it was an urban legend, but then it happened to me, so...
That's fabulous. I mean, God, that is all just like a treasure trove of information, and it really just makes me think about the fact that, you know, I definitely came to spanking as you were describing from the perspective of the eroticism of a power dynamic and punishment, and the physiological aspect was of physical arousal that wasn't even just, oh, I'm aroused because I eroticize the power exchange, but I'm aroused because blood is rushing to my pelvis right now. You know, I'm not necessarily thinking that as I'm being spanked, but later, while contemplating it, it really is, it's like pretty basic arithmetic, right? I mean, if blood being drawn to the pelvis is the physiological definition of arousal, and spanking does that, then and yeah, and it absolutely, I always want to sort of assure people, especially when I am talking to vanilla friends, which I do have, and talking to them about spanking, I always try to emphasize that it doesn't have to involve an elaborate ritual or pageantry. I love that shit, but like, it doesn't have to involve, and I'm also not always in the mood for that. Sometimes I just want to be spanked, and I also think that sometimes it has to do with a particular kind of ass worship as well. I mean, I'm a switch, so I also love to spank, and for me, a lot of it is just really being able to get my hands on an ass and being able to manipulate it. And by manipulate, I mean like groping and, you know, kind of like shaking it around. And, you know, like all of that stuff is just really, really sexy to me. And the fact that someone is trusting me enough to, you know, putting your ass over somebody's lap or bending over for them puts them in a very vulnerable position, and you're also manipulating something that is very close to their genitals but isn't their genitals, and it always sort of feels related, and well, it doesn't always feel related, but it often does. and I also think that on the subject of spanking being arousing, I think that there's something to the fact that for women in particular, and I'm going to speak generally about women and vaginas and clitorises, lots of different kinds of stimulation work for different women in terms of arousal and orgasm.
Yeah.
And some people, you know, some women really love to, you know, you like look at them askance and they get wet, and some people need to be teased, and some people need a variety of sensation. And so the ability to arouse someone almost indirectly can also be a really great tease. Mm. So I think that that is another potential that maybe gets lost a little bit when we're focusing on the kiss me Kate part of spanking.
Yeah.
Do you have tips for that hypothetical person that we were talking about earlier, who is curious about spanking and isn't quite sure where to start? Let's start with a bottom, like somebody who is interested in being spanked, but they're not sure how to bring it up to a date or how to bring it up to a partner.
I think that there's a lot of different ways to broach the subject. People who are brave and who are seriously interested can always consider making a profile on FetLife.
Right.
Where people with different kinks can connect. But if someone is more of the OkCupid type of guy or gal,
yeah,
they'd rather keep things kind of simple. I think that people just need to talk to each other. And I don't think this is specific to spanking or kink or any kind of minority sexuality. I think that people just need to talk to each other about their sexual desires and their sexual interests. There's nothing shameful about it, and there's nothing frightening about it. I think that's where love lives. It lives in that kind of honesty and candor and disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if someone is interested in spanking, they should approach it the same way they would if they were interested in having sex in a field, or if they were interested in having sex in the shower, or you know, anything. Just, we all need to talk to our partners, because otherwise I think people are in for a lot of loneliness if they don't share themselves with the people they love.
Do you have advice for tops or bottoms who have fantasies about spanking but feel conflict or guilt around sort of the implications of, you know, it being anti-feminist for a woman to be spanked by a man, or not wanting to quote-unquote hurt their partner, or not wanting to enact a, you know, a corrupt power dynamic with their partner?
Yeah, I it's a good question, and I've gotten some really heartbreaking emails from young men who are becoming aware of dominant sexual inclinations, who really suffer from the political implications of it. I remember I got one email that broke my heart from a guy in college, and he wrote, I'm getting a little choked up just thinking about it. He read my Modern Love column about the process of sharing my spanking fetish with my now husband. And he emailed me, and he felt the need to say, you know, 10 times in his email, I'm not abusive. I'm not one of those, you know, wife beaters. I really am not that kind of guy. But he had been really traumatized by the fact, he wrote, that when he was in high school, his father, who he wrote.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Is a psychiatrist, found some of his spanking porn,
right,
and made his son enroll in domestic violence programs, and which is horrible. And he felt really deeply disturbed by the fact that in his fantasy life he spanked a woman. So I tried to reassure him that there are hundreds of thousands of women who will relish a guy like that, who dream of a guy like that, and there are hundreds of thousands of submissive men who would relish a guy like that if they're gay, or a woman like that if they are heterosexual. And I just tried to tell him that it's okay, but it's hard. I think in a lot of ways dominant men have the hardest time because of those really disturbing implications. And my heart goes out to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that also that submissive women can deal with that sort of that same guilt and confusion in the sort of inverse way. You know, if you are a strong, independent, feminist woman and you have fantasies of being submissive, it doesn't really matter if you're being submissive to men or submissive to women or submissive to whoever, that just that having sexual fantasies about being submissive can be really confusing, because we don't, I think, talk enough about the ways that sexuality can be such a metaphor and such an allegory, and that sometimes our desires are the opposite of our politics or our, you know, in real life identity, just for that reason.
Yeah, it took me a long time to detach my sexuality from my politics, because I am a fierce and outspoken feminist.
Yeah.
And someone who has believed in and campaigned for gender equality since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And for years, it was very hard for me to reconcile my erotic fantasies with my politics. And it doesn't help that there are people out there saying, oh, spanking fetishists or female submissives have just internalized patriarchy or internalized gender inequality. That's such a condescending thing to say.
I mean, also, maybe, like, we live in this fucking world and, like, we internalize it somewhat, and then we, I mean, everybody internalizes it.
Yeah.
I've got news for you. Everybody internalizes racism. Everybody internalizes misogyny and sexism, because this is the fucking oppressive world that we live in. But actually, yes, and channeling it into sexuality, in my experience, is one of the best outlets for struggling with all of that horrible oppressive bullshit that is put into you by virtue of growing up in America, growing up in the West.
Absolutely. And again, that's nothing shameful. It's healthy, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Did you, I saw that on Twitter you were asking people to email you about this podcast or about this subject. Did you get any interesting questions or suggestions?
I had, you know, several emails that said, because I asked them to answer the question, spanking, why are you into that?
Yeah.
Since that is your theme. And many, many of them said, because I was born this way, they share my feeling that it is an innate inclination that they've grappled with since childhood. But other people said that there's something about the kind of dangerous aspect of, there's nothing literally dangerous, but there's a perceived danger about spanking that they said they liked. Several people mentioned the trust aspect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One submissive man who I email with often and am friends with on Twitter wrote, because it feels fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's as simple as that. It feels good, and if you just, like, with virtually anything that we talk about on the podcast, if you are aware of and in touch with your fantasies and you're able to negotiate and create, you know, what Connor Habib and I were talking about this sort of drawing the circle, within the circle, you know, the circle of consent and the circle of sort of bringing people's desires and boundaries together, then you can play with all of those things and just say, like, oh, well, it feels good, so let's do it, and we'll leave the patriarchy on the outside of the circle.
Yeah, I mean, as long as things are consensual.
Yeah.
What the hell do the politics matter?
Here, here. So there was something really fascinating in your Slate piece, Is Kink an Orientation, that you were also talking about on the Savage Love cast, about the sort of almost, you know, semantic, you know, brain puzzle of, well, if kink is an orientation, then that might mean that it might supersede or come, you know, a higher or lower on a hierarchy of gender orientation, and that it also might be something that you were inclined towards beyond sexuality. I was just talking to Stephen Elliott, who's going to be in an episode, Why Are People Into Submission, who was talking about how his orientation is pretty much towards all of the kinky things that he likes, and he could sort of take or leave the sexual element of it, sexual as in, you know, penetration and orgasm. And so I'm curious about, you were saying that you realized that you weren't bisexual or queer so much as you were attracted to dominance, and that the gender of the person was ultimately irrelevant to you.
Yeah, as I wrote, for a long time I self-identified as bisexual because I did and still do experience attraction to people of both genders. But in recent years, as I started talking about kink more and writing about kink and becoming more in touch with my sexual orientation, I realized that it's not quite accurate to say that I'm attracted to men and women. I'm attracted to dominance.
Yeah.
And their gender is irrelevant. I've been attracted to dominant men and dominant women.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I realized that, it started to feel inaccurate to call myself bisexual, and felt more accurate to think of kink as my orientation. And I know that there are a lot of people who feel that way. But I also try really hard to be as inclusive as possible. And so I think it's really important to emphasize that there are kinky people who don't feel that way, who don't feel that it was an orientation, or don't even feel that it's something they grew up with, something they were born with. It's they learn to love spanking later in life, or they spice up their marriages with spanking. And if those people self-identify as kinky, then they 100% are. I don't think it has to be an orientation for everyone. I just think it is for me.
Yeah, and obviously some people are homo, and some people are hetero, and some people are at one time in their life more or less attracted to any particular gender, and at more at different times in their life attracted to different kinds of sexuality as well. And some people are just really focused on one thing their whole life. And then it's interesting to think about the different permutations, right? So I definitely know people who are, attracted to men when they're attracted to submissive men and dominant women, you know, or they're attracted to, one kind of gender or one other kind of identity when it comes to a particular kink activity that they like, or a particular sex act that they like, but not others. Mm. And I guess the truth of the matter is the more identities and orientations you bring into it, the more permutations that you have. And the truth of the matter is that if what some people I think are oriented towards and sort of like an exploratory spirit when it comes to those things, which is not to say that that is better than somebody who's like, this is what I like and this is what I'm always going to like. But yeah. And like we were saying earlier that it does seem to be a little bit of a generational thing that the, even folks who are, you know, just becoming adults now are a little bit like, I'm pansexual. And
I think our generation has more comfort with gender fluidity or sexual fluidity or these gray areas between the strong lines than earlier generations.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting also to ask the question of whether it's even accurate to call spanking a sexual orientation or whether the term orientation would be better. Because I know some people who in their relationships separate the act of intercourse and sex. They don't mix the two. I do tend to mix the two.
You mean spanking?
Spanking. So yeah. What did I?
Oh, you said intercourse sex? And sex.
I meant spanking.
Yeah.
I tend to think of spanking as foreplay or part of the process of sex. But I know some people who do not bring the two together ever. They enjoy sex and they enjoy spanking, and they think of them as two completely different but equally awesome pastimes. So yeah. Maybe it would be more appropriate to say orientation than sexual orientation. I don't even know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really love incorporating spanking into sex, and like you were saying, you know, if you're over somebody's lap and, you know, you feel their the arousal of the spanker, in their lap, and, you know, somebody is spanking you and they can reach between your legs or, like, put a butt plug in you or put a vibrator on you while they're spanking you or anything like that, there are so many amazing ways to incorporate the two.
It can kind of transition naturally.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of, I mean, when you think about it, like, in terms of the choreography. I mean,
you're already in the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. but spanking is my favorite thing to do with friends who I play with, you know, at play parties or just, like, you know, roughhousing, horsing around with people who I'm not necessarily interested in having sex with in the sense of orgasm, penetration, or anything like that. But spanking is just a really fun thing to do with friends. And it in those cases, it might not be arousing to me so much as, you know, I might experience a lot of what I like about being a masochist, the catharsis and release of, you know, an endorphin rush of consensual erotic pain and, sort of sometimes the teasing, power dynamic of a friend spanking you and, or knowing that they really like to do that and giving them that, and vice versa also as a top, you know, it's fun to, it's just kind of the same as, like, I can remember being young, like, in my early 20s and, like, going to the, when I first started, like, drinking, you know, with guy friends and, like, after a few beers, we'd just start beating each other up, you know? Like, that was just fun to be like, no, keep punching me until I bruise, you know? And it, for some reason that feels connected in my mind where it's like, oh, well, we're just, like, horsing around and having fun and hurting each other in a way that we know is consensual and isn't damaging, you know? It's not about hurt, like, I want to actually destroy you or ruin you, although the threat of that can be sexy. but more like, I want to see what a body can do,
yeah,
you know?
For many people, including me, spanking is a perplexing mix of sexual and asexual.
Interesting. Do you... Sometimes I feel like I could go longer without sex than without spanking.
Oh, I, without question.
Interesting.
Oh. Yeah, no, I,
And I mean, like, a week. No, but I mean, like, when I really think about, like, if I had to, for, like, a year, give up one or the other, I mean, it's just me, but I think a lot of people would be, like, horrified.
I, my husband is vanilla. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, so
I saw that in your article, yeah. Yeah. That you talked about that a little bit.
So, his enjoyment of our sex life is based on intercourse and other more traditional sexual activities.
Mm.
So I want him to be happy and satisfied. So just speaking hypothetically, because in practice I would never go without sex for a year because I would feel that I was depriving my husband of what he enjoys. But in detaching him from this, if I had to go either a year without having sex or a year without being spanked, there is no question. That is the easiest thing to answer in the world. I would go for a year without sex. That's like asking me if I would rather go for a year without oxygen or go for a year without red wine. I mean, I like red wine, but I need my oxygen.
Oh, man, that's so a hard one for me. No,
I think spanking is oxygen in that metaphor.
Wow, that's amazing.
I really need it, Tina.
Well, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Sometimes I start to get cranky and I don't realize why. And, it's because I need, to get spanked or to be spanked. For me, I have always been a switchy, versatile person where, pretty much everything that I like to do as a top, I like to do as a bottom and vice versa. And sometimes I crave one or the other, but a lot of the time it's just the activity itself that I really, am craving and obsessed with. But that's really interesting. I mean, it also seems like, and this is not about you, I'm thinking more hypothetically, it seems like for some folks, there might be, spanking can be something that maybe they're monogamish with their partner, where they're monogamous in terms of sexuality, but they might, you know, play or have spanking dates with other folks, and that could be potentially something that is, like, worked out between people, where, again, this is not, like, I'm not saying, like, I think, I want to know if you do this, or I think you should do this, but I feel like, I know folks like this, and I think that,
Yeah, I know lots of monogamous couples who play, with people outside that relationship.
Yeah.
I'm monogamous. I'm pretty fiercely monogamous. In fact, that feels more central to my sexual identity than even the fact that my husband is a man does. But when I first wrote the Modern Love article, and he and I were kind of navigating the fact that I have this really intense, all-consuming sexual obsession that he doesn't share.
Yeah.
We had some conversations about whether I should play with dominant people outside the relationship. In fact, this was a few years ago, but I remember we had a conversation where I said, you know, this spanking kink of mine is so strong that I would even be totally happy playing with dominant women only.
Yeah.
So I was like, would you feel comfortable if I played with some dominant women? I thought that maybe he wouldn't feel threatened if I played with people of a different gender than his. So it's something that we talked about and considered, but ultimately, I decided that I don't need to play with anyone else. I don't want to play with anyone else. To me, spanking is really linked with love.
Yeah.
And
it's so intimate.
It's so intimate.
Again, it doesn't have to be, and sometimes it's really great for it to be casual. And I was just at a party this weekend where some of my friends, it was their 6-year anniversary, and the dominant partner had a bunch of us spank the other partner as, like, a celebration of that, you know, so that was, again, that was, like, a fun friend thing.
Yeah, it can totally be physical.
But it can also be just the most
intimate expression. But for me, it's so expression. Intimate, and I don't think I could do it with anyone other than my husband. I don't think I'd be satisfied by it. And that was, you know, we had that conversation when my Modern Love article first came out. That was, like, 2.5 years ago. Since then, we've settled into a sexual dynamic that really works for both of us, and I'm very satisfied. But there's nothing wrong with people who explore their kink outside of their relationships. As long as everything's above board and consensual, it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
But something that, speaking of the intimacy of spanking, something that surprises a lot of people, because I write about sex, is that I've only had 2 boyfriends in my life.
Hmm.
And I've only had sex with 2 people in my life, and I've only been spanked by 2 sexual partners in my life. And for me, it's just a really fiercely intimate thing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really beautiful. It's a very beautiful example of a dynamic where one person has a very strong kink desire that the other person doesn't share, but because of intimacy and love and trust and compassion and all these other things that I'm hearing from you and that I've read in your pieces, that it's something that you can share, and it doesn't have to be like, well, you know, you need to develop this fetish and share it with me. It's, here's something that I love and need, so let's do it together.
I think it's a healthy process. As I said before, all partners should be talking about sex and their sexual interests. And speaking with David, my husband, about my sexuality provoked some more candid conversations about his sexuality. After I wrote the Modern Love piece for the first time ever in our 8-year relationship, we shared each other's erotica.
Awesome.
He showed me an example of his pornography, and I prefer written erotica, so I showed him examples of some stories that I read.
Do you know Shadow Lane? Shadow Lane.
Of course I know Shadow Lane. I've never been to their party in Vegas. You know, I've never actually been to a play party. I tried to go once. There was a spanking party in downtown New York, and they invited me to come. It was, again, right after my Modern Love article came out. And I thought, okay, I'm a public spanking fetishist now, so I should go. This is the next step. I need to go to a spanking party and embrace my new role as this public spankophile. So I went down to the building where the party was, and I stood outside for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And couldn't bring myself to go in.
That's interesting.
So that was my one attempt at publicly... or I guess I am public about my kink, but
yeah.
it was my first attempt to be public off the page, and it failed, so...
Well, what do you think was... Is there something... Do you now, having had that experience, do you think, oh, it might... If I found the right environment, it might be really fun to be at a party where people were spanking one another?
Well, I know I wouldn't play at a party like that, because as I said, I only play with my husband.
But what about going with your husband?
But just going to socialize. Oh, I wouldn't want my husband to spank me in public. I don't think...
That's interesting.
I think I'd be too self-conscious.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't mean to interrupt you, but I actually am... I've found... that I am more of an exhibitionist about spanking and being spanked than I am about sex.
Interesting.
And that took me a really long time to admit that I actually really don't get off on or feel very comfortable having sex in public. But when it comes to spanking, I'm like, I don't know, there's something about the theatrics and the sport of it, and maybe just a lot of confidence in my ability to take it, to dish it out and take it, that is super fun and exciting to me.
I think any exhibitionistic streak I have is only expressed through my work and my writing.
Interesting.
I kind of expose myself in my articles, but I don't think I could expose myself in real life.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah. It's a little, bit hypocritical, I realize, to
write
about this, but then be too scared to walk into a simple party with like-minded people.
I mean, I don't think it's hypocritical. I think that comfort and boundaries are the same as desire, and you don't actually need a reason for a boundary, or you don't owe anybody an explanation for a boundary, and it just, like, paradoxically, you can be a strong feminist and enjoy being submissive and being punished. You can be someone who speaks very openly, intellectually, politically, in your career about something and then not feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
You're okay. if we're good on time, I would love to ask you if you have any opinions about spanking role plays. Like, do you have any perspective on them, or like how they can, again, going back to sort of the advice dynamic, like, do you have any advice for a good place to start for somebody who wants to do a role play that wants to do a spanking scene that involves a role play or some kind of dynamic of discipline or punishment?
Yeah. I feel like a one song jukebox here, but you got to talk to your partner and be really honest about it. And it's so damn hard to do. But if you're with the right partner or partners, they'll be non-judgmental and they'll listen. And everyone has their own sexual fantasies and sexual desires. And if you are brave enough to take the step and share your sexual fantasies, then hopefully your partner or partners will share their sexual fantasies with you.
Yeah, it reminds me of what you were saying about the fact that you realize that fundamentally you're submissive. And I haven't heard you identify as a masochist necessarily, but it sounds like the pain is an element of that for you.
Tina, it is... confusing.
Yeah.
Because when we were talking before about the guy who emailed me and said, because it feels fucking good, that's why I like spanking. We laughed and the conversation moved on, but I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know, do I think it feels good? I think it feels necessary. I think I'm a little addicted to spanking.
That's really interesting.
But it hurts.
Oh, yeah, really, I feel like you said that in one of your pieces as well.
It hurts a lot sometimes.
Yeah.
So for me, I tend to think of spanking kind of like running. I'm not a runner, but whenever I do run, it kind of hurts to run.
And of course.
I wouldn't... There are plenty of people who enjoy running, and I envy them, but I don't really enjoy running. But I always feel glad that I did afterwards. I feel satisfied. And I'm told some people get kind of addicted to exercise, that there's an endorphin rush that comes when they exercise. There's an endorphin rush that I experience when I get spanked. So, if I could... It's hard to imagine. I'm wondering if I could be spanked without pain, would I want to be? I don't really know the answer to that question because it's hard to... It's hard to detach the two things.
Well,
but I wouldn't call myself a masochist. I don't enjoy pain.
Interesting.
But pain is kind of a necessary part of it. So maybe I'm addicted to pain.
I think that's an 80s hair metal band song, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, no, I definitely relate to what you're saying about the endurance being part of the eroticism, and I think that comparing it to exercise is very apt. You know, when people are like, I don't understand how anybody could, like, actively decide to do something painful.
Yeah.
I always remind them, you know, do you go to the gym?
Yeah,
you know?
People say, they go to the gym and they say, oh, my muscles hurt so much, right. I feel the burn.
Exactly.
I'm tearing through my muscles, my abs are aching, and it's like a source of pride.
Exactly.
Physical, you know, I think it just harkens back to the fact that sexuality is so stigmatized across the board, all kinds of sexuality. Physical pain and discomfort in the pursuit of exercise is applauded.
Yes.
But physical pain in the pursuit of orgasm or psychological satisfaction
is totally stigmatized.
Is stigmatized and demonized, and I think
And pathologized as well.
It's absolutely pathologized, and it makes no sense.
It makes no fucking sense. Thank you.
So next time someone asks me if I exercise, instead of saying no and then reminding myself that I will join a gym someday, and next time I will proudly say, yes, I do exercise. I get regular spankings.
Yes. No, that's... Thank you for sharing that. That is very interesting. By the way, I did want to ask you. You were saying that you can't imagine a spanking without pain, but, you know, some... I mean, there's, like, the classic, you know, pulling over the lap, like, amping up, you know, rapid-fire sort of, you know, domestic discipline punishment. And then there's sensual spankings, and, you know, I definitely find that, in particular, like, if I'm warmed up very slowly, and the more aroused I am, which we've discussed how that might occur, yeah, of course, there's lots of different ways to do that, if I am, if I'm really into it, and I'm really relaxed, and I'm really comfortable, then that level of intensity, you know, the maybe, like, the 7 on the pain scale, if you just haul off and do that right away, it feels really painful. Now, sometimes that high intense pain is its own erotic experience, but also being slowly amped up so that the 7 doesn't even, it doesn't feel like, it feel, you feel the pain, but it, you experience it differently.
Yeah, I know,
you
know exactly what you're talking about. When I have a warm-up spanking before more intense play, I can absolutely take much, much more than I otherwise could. What's happening physiologically is that pain releases endorphins. And so if you sort of ramp up the level of pain very gradually, then the level of endorphins also ramp up correspondingly. And then you reach a point where you're having such an endorphin rush that you don't feel the pain as acutely as you otherwise would.
And I also experience psychologically, you know, what is called subspace by some, and what you were also referring to, I think, is very connected with trust and intimacy, that the more I'm amped up in that way, the more I start to surrender psychologically, and then I start to surrender physically.
Yeah, when you're in the right frame of mind, it's exactly. A lot easier to take a higher degree of pain than...
And it's not even that it's easy, it's that it feels...
it's more rewarding, like we were talking about with exercise, right? That taking that pain is not like, oh, I'm putting up with this. It's I want it because I want to submit to this person, or because I want to show how tough I am, or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I also experienced, I wonder if from your physiological research, if you have insight into this, I found that when I was a professional submissive, you know, I had a lot of spanking clients, and some of my best, in fact, all of my best clients over the years were spanking tops, I think partially because, you know, we had a rapport and something very deep and genuine in common. I had some spanking top clients who, either because they were just lousy at spanking or because they were new to it, but they didn't want to admit it because they wanted to be the toppiest top from Topper Town or whatever, who would just, or because they're just fucking assholes, would start spanking me at like a really high intensity right away without necessarily negotiating that. Because if you negotiate that, we can talk about it. But, and then I would bruise very quickly from sort of, you know, my physical sensation would be, I'm tensing up, I'm watching the clock, I'm thinking about the money instead of getting into the play.
Yeah.
And then when I would have clients who would be real gentlemen in negotiation and, like, give me a warm-up or have a really great immersive role play or anything like that, they could get me to the point where they would be spanking me at that same intensity, and I wouldn't bruise.
Yeah.
And I always felt that was very strange. Like, I could feel physically that I would be bruising because my body was so tense. Mm-hmm. I always felt like it was kind of an interesting, like, mind over matter thing, where I could be taken to much more prolonged, intense physical endurance by people who had established trust or eroticism or, professional respect, and that it wouldn't leave marks. Of course, marks are okay if they're negotiated and can be fun and a source of pride. I don't know if you feel that way, but...
Oh, bruises are so sexy.
I'm glad we're on the same page about that.
When I get a spanking and don't bruise, I'm kind of disappointed and pissy about it.
Interesting. Have you experienced that? Well, it sounds like you, I mean, my perspective, of course, coming from, like, playing with a lot of strangers in a professional context is different from your experience of monogamous intimacy, but have you had the experience of sort of different kinds of spankings giving bruises in different ways?
Well, certainly different implements leave different kinds of bruises. But, you know, I haven't had the experience of being spanked by someone I didn't trust.
Yeah.
So I haven't had...
Lucky.
Yeah. I am lucky. I haven't had the experience that you described of tensing up and waiting for it to end and resisting. But,
and I just want to say those experiences may have been unpleasant, but I feel like they also taught me a lot, you know what I mean?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
They make perfect sense to me, because after all, the brain is the most important sex organ.
That's right.
So if your brain isn't digging it, then I am not surprised that the rest of your body wasn't digging it either.
Yeah. So yeah, bruises are great, huh? And even that when you were talking about how the blood is drawn to the area and the pink and then the red and then the more intensity of, you know, different colored bruising, like, man, that is so fucking hot. It's hot to have it, but it's hot to watch it happen, and yeah.
Bruises are beautiful, and to me, I said this to my best friend once, and she's a very sort of proper woman.
Uh-huh.
So when I made this comparison, she was like, no, don't make that comparison. That's terrible. But I said that I feel like bruises are to me what hickeys are to, like, 16-year-olds. Like, something they like, and it reminds them that they really made out with that hot guy.
Uh-huh.
It really happened.
Yeah.
So my best friend cringed, because she was like, hickeys are horrible. No one should ever have a hickey. Don't compare bruises to hickeys. So that made me laugh. But I think I love bruises the way teenagers love hickeys.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. And, consensual, intentional, hickeys can be really fun and great too. Maybe not on the neck, unless you're really unless someone has been very bad,
or if it's winter and you can wear a scarf.
Exactly,
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it can be such a great expression of whatever the spanking means, right? Like all the things we've talked about, like seeing your bruises can be like, oh, that's an expression of love, because it's about what we did in the context of that circle, right? It's not like he hit me and it felt like a kiss. It's like we negotiated and consented to that intensity meaning something else.
And to be honest, there's a perverse kind of pride,
sure,
that I take in it.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
look at how much I was able to take.
Exactly, exactly. It also feels, if you really have, like, deep bruises, and it kind of gives your ass that almost, like, stiff kind of feeling, and then when you're, like, sitting on the train the next day, and you
or
can really...
Or that deep, prickling itch when they start to heal.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that shit's fun. It's fun to give that to someone. I always like to suggest when people are in long distance relationships and they both like spanking or other kinds of impact or corporal play, that giving someone those kinds of deep bruises is a way of feeling close to them when you're far away.
Yeah, the relationship or the physical proximity of a relationship might not last, but the bruises will. So yeah. If someone has to get on an airplane and go to a faraway city for work or something.
Exactly.
He can leave some bruises behind with him.
Yeah. Well, on that lovely note, thank you for so much for coming over and talking about my favorite subject. I feel like we covered so much ground.
Yeah, it's my favorite subject, too.
Yes.
So thanks for having me.
Well, I'm sure this will be the first of many talks about spanking. It's Jillian with a J, NYC is your
web.
And then Jillian Keenan, at Jillian Keenan on Twitter as well. And
yep.
We'll watch for your book. And do you have any other articles that are coming out soon that are in the next month or so that we should watch out for?
When I'm not writing about spanking 20 hours a day, I'm a serious foreign correspondent. And I've reported from Somalia and Kazakhstan and the Philippines. And I just returned from a reporting trip to Burundi, Madagascar, and Niger. So I have a piece coming out about Burundi in Foreign Policy magazine in the next few months.
Great.
I am about to write a piece on Niger, and after that, I guess I'll write about Madagascar. So if people have had enough spanking talk, they can always check out my foreign policy work.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure everybody will be checking that out, and thanks for coming over, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
I went poking around smittenkitten.online.com to find spanking-related stuff, and wouldn't you know it, I found paddles, movies, books, and more on this juicy subject. Check out smittenkittenonline.com, enter the word spank into their little search engine, and see what happens. Also, visit wirepeopleintothat.com and sign up for our newsletter to get all the best selfies delivered directly to your inbox. You can follow at Into That Podcast and at Tina Horns S on Twitter, subscribe on iTunes, and we are now up on Stitcher too. Thanks for tuning in to episode 18. Next time, my guest is an old friend, Mickey Maud, deconstructing the complex issue of sexually alluring fear.
You can't eliminate fear from your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to be something that you're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you can condition yourself to handle that fear in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that are helpful, ways that push your boundaries, ways that teach you more about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of like take that in, or you could project that and you could put that onto other people in ways that they don't consent. And that often happens in our culture, and we see it in porn to an nth degree.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to figure out if I deserve to be spanked because I've been good, or if I deserve to be spanked because I've been bad.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.